Welcome to the Lucra Podcast. I'm your host, Mindy Kinnis. My goal is to fan the flame of the dream in your heart. As my guests and I share our journeys on the path to success, you'll get an insider's look at how we got to where we are and the beliefs that create our reality. When you follow your heart path to ignite your mind and delight your spirit, you can create a lucrative life of freedom and purpose. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, my friends. We have an amazing episode for you today. I am sitting here with my friend, Garrett Gunderson. He is the author of 9 books, which we are going to talk all about. And more importantly, Garrett and I go way, way back. He was a dear friend of Sean's, so that is how we met a million years ago. And it's been a minute since we have caught up. So Garrett, thank you for being here.
Mostly a friend of Sean's. I bothered him every now and again because we both took comedy too far at times, you know.
Yeah. Do you want to say more about that?
Well, I remember, so my wife and I were married for like 7 years and we wanted to do this like second honeymoon in Chicago. We love Chicago and we had like 3 couples that we thought had been a great marriages. They were older than us. And so we wanted to learn from them. So I had Sean come and do this like ceremony because, you know, on relationships and commitment. So he shows up and nobody at this place really knew Sean. And, you know, and I was just saying the most ridiculous stuff. And everyone was so uncomfortable other than Carrie and I, because Carrie knew Sean. And Sean was just playing it up. Like, how could you say these things? Which, you know, wasn't. So at the end, he eventually let him know it was all good. But like, I don't know, every now and again, I took it too far. You know, he was saying stuff like, why does my mom love you more than me? And I'm like, because I could wipe my own ass, you know, stuff like that. And like, and so it's it. But the thing is, he started all of this. I'm speaking.
He totally would have.
Oh, I was so nervous speaking at this event because it was an event that he and I both spoke at. The Dalai Lama was speaking at it, and Stephen Covey. And
oh, this is the one up in Canada.
And so I'm on stage. I was so nervous going up on stage. That's probably the second most nervous I've ever been. And he's in the front row making gestures.
Giving you shit.
Giving me shit about the worst stuff. And like everybody thinks it's sweet little innocent Sean. But no, like he's messing with me the whole time. So he instigated it. And then he could always play the card of like, I can't believe you're saying this. And people are like, yeah, that's so messed up that you would say that.
Yeah, look at this asshole. I'm just this little dude in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So. He definitely played it up. So let's talk about some stuff. You have a wealth of expertise that is very, very applicable to this show and to my audience. So let's talk a little bit about what the heck you are doing today, because I don't even know all the details of it. You started telling me a little bit before we started recording, but what's happening today? What are you doing?
Well, I sold the company in 2021, but in selling that company, I still had some obligations and duties with it for a couple of years, which I sold it because in the process of scaling a business, often, and I think you'd find this with a lot of people, they lose the things that they love most about the business. So I stopped getting to connect with the people that we served. It was always just on a webinar. It was never one-on-one anymore. As we started to grow, it was more about looking at spreadsheets and numbers and understanding margins. And it's like, it lost its soulfulness for me. But the person I sold it to is amazing at that kind of stuff and enjoys those kind of things. And they've actually grown it. I just needed to find the artist that I am and really embrace the things that I love. So I was doing comedy back in 2017 as a hobby. And I decided to embrace it and do a comedy special around money in 2021. And then do 2 comedy tours, and I'm in progress of selling the comedy special. We're negotiating with the distributors right now. So that's been a huge project. I'm like, how could I use entertainment as a gateway to transformation? So I wrote, I don't even know if you know this, I wrote a theatrical keynote where it's like a Broadway play meets a keynote meets, I don't know, it's like, it's a combination of things. And I think you probably saw like Bo Eason's Run of the Litter maybe, or know who Bo is. Like definitely, like he inspired me when I saw him do it back in like, I don't know, it was probably like 2012. And so I've written this theatrical keynote where I act out 4 different characters, which are the 4 different money personas. I take people through an exercise by playing music so that they could feel what it's like to be in abundance, not just hear about abundance. As a 45-year-old white man, I decided to do like a spoken word rap at the end because why not? You know, if you set the expectations low, then it's easy to deliver is what I found.
Sure.
So I've been doing that. I have a book coming out called Money Unmasked. I have another book coming out called I Am Money that's a children's book. And so I write a blog because I didn't realize it wasn't 2006 anymore. That's a lot of the stuff I'm up to. I like to write, perform, create, you know, present, practice, like anything that has to do with like feeling like more expressed and more artistic, because I didn't want to just do the same old teach about finance, but I can teach about it in a totally different way.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, because the thing for me is like, how do we continue to make stuff, right? If it stops being about making stuff or creating something, then it just isn't all that interesting to me, even though it might be important or other people might enjoy, you know, some aspects of it. I'm like, whatever, it has to feed my soul. So I totally get what you're saying. Can you talk a little bit about how you got to that stage? I know you've done a whole lot of different things over your entrepreneurial career. And I think a lot of people in my audience are those that are just getting started or even maybe aspiring to do their own thing and, you know, look at different possibilities. Yeah. So I'd love to hear a little bit about the journey.
I think that there was like three main things that made the biggest difference. The first one was I took my family for a summer to Italy, and just being out of our natural element, we rented this villa, had a swimming pool. We'd sit out on the kind of main area and play cards. We'd just walk up the street and have pizza. We'd get in the car and drive a couple miles and have some gelato. We just hang out a lot.
Love
it. It was really hard the first 2.5 weeks. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was just sitting there looking at the Slack channels, and the business wasn't doing as well with me being gone. They were going to host the first Wealth Acceleration Workshop without me there. I was like, how's this going to go? But I was trying to trust the process. It wasn't until I discovered the Aperol Spritz that it all changed. I don't know if you ever had an Aperol Spritz, but it's like sunshine.
That's what changed it for you?
Well, I got drunk. I just got drunk. I started dancing on the table. My wife thought it was hilarious. We just started talking about what would be the best concerts in the world to see. Let's see if any of them are in Europe. And I actually booked twice the number of tickets we needed to go see Elton John, because I was too drunk to book tickets and did it anyway. And we took our kids to see Elton John in between a castle and a church in a courtyard. It was really cool. And just all of a sudden I was able to let go. I wasn't like in the grind. Like, I was just so used to like these habits of working all the time and having work to do. And all of a sudden I had a little bit of boredom. I had a little bit of like, I'm up before everybody else. I guess I'll go work out in the yard. Like, meaning like I had a sandbag and they thought I was in the army, because like, why are you throwing that shit around the yard? Right. And then I just had all this time to think. And when I came back, I was like, how can I take some of the cool elements of Italy and bring it back home? And the first thing I was like, well, I didn't drink coffee before. So I'm like, I'm going to learn how to make epic coffee.
Yeah, so that's amazing.
I went to Intelligentsia and I met with a barista. I took one of the employees that we had that roasted his own coffee beans. I bought him an espresso machine and me an espresso machine. I like just dove in so that I could in the morning sit down with my wife and have a great cup of coffee or great latte while we talk. So that was the first step. The second step is like, we need a place that we can go to that feels amazing. So we bought this cabin on a river with massive trees that we could just go hang out, build a fire outside. We could take a walk along the river. We could do the things in Italy, like play cards and games and not have anywhere to go or be. And that thing changed my life, because all of a sudden I started to learn how to shoot a bow, how to fly fish. I became a whiskey somm, so I could do whiskey tastings for people to come hang out. And what I found was having all this time and space was the first, you know, void that came up, so I could create from a blank space versus create from what I already knew. I thought that I was my business at the time. Like, if my business was good, I was good. If my business wasn't good, I wasn't good. If someone said something negative, it was negative about me, not about the business. And so I, for the first time, separated, and the business was now a canvas in which to create into. What I found was that canvas started to become more and more stale based upon who I was. Even though it became more and more valuable, it became less and less fulfilling for me. And so when I came home, my wife made the mistake of saying I was kind of funny. I translated that to I was a comedic god, and I just started doing comedy. So I just did an open mic, started touring around with my friends that were comedians, and then ended up doing a comedy special. So having a hobby taking some time away. And then what I really did was I kind of opted out of everything for a while. I didn't listen to podcasts. I didn't read books. I didn't go to masterminds. I did do some medicine work, but like ultimately I just decided it was time to be alone with myself and understand what my thinking patterns were like and do some writing that was for no one other than me, like writing in a journal and thinking through life's questions and what I wanted my life to be and really get clear about my win. And so it was really the hobby, the time away, and the personal reflection. Those were the catalysts to kind of become more artistic, expressed, and fulfilled.
Garrett, you know what I love about you is that you don't do anything half-assed. Like any of those things, you like took it so much further than most people would, which I absolutely appreciate, because then look at what the fruits have been in your own existence. That is freaking awesome. So tell me this. This is something I ask every single guest, and I'm very curious about your response to it, because you've been so enmeshed in the world of wealth and finance and all of these things. But what is your definition of wealth?
A life well lived.
Mic drop.
Everything beyond that is a lie. Net worth is not wealth.
Yes, preach,
stuff
preach.
Is not wealth. We've been lied to that wealth is a number in a bank account. But I've been in places where I've had more money and less money, where I've had more societal success and less societal success. But when I'm actually true to who I am, when I'm enjoying the process along the way, I feel wealthiest. That doesn't mean that I don't have bouts of scarcity, because I've written a lot of books. I'm in the wealth game, and sometimes people try to guess what my net worth is. And some people have such a large number that if I give that too much attention, I can feel inadequate. I could feel like I've failed somehow. But like what I had to do to be clear about it, so that it didn't get, I didn't get in this comparison trap, because no one really walks around with their net worth and shows it off. It's not like, it's like a penis. It's hidden under the pants. You know what I'm saying?
Like, don't you think it's like a thing for the internet to be like, what is so-and-so's net worth? And they say right. It on there. Like, do you know what Sean's was online? According to online, Sean Stevenson's net worth was $33 million. And we looked that up and I'm like, babe, where you got all that money?
What are you doing with all this? Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you have all that?
And, you know, and so what I found was, like, it's even when I wrote Killing Sacred Cows, I said net worth was relatively worthless if it can't be converted to cash flow or it isn't utilized by someone while they're alive. Yet it's become a thing that's like a measuring contest of what's your net worth, even though anyone that comes and tells you what it is, they're probably full of shit.
Right? Why would they be telling you anyway?
Why are they telling you anyway? And yet it's this subconscious thing that we carry around feeling inadequate if it's not bigger. And, you know, some people are like, well, they think it's good. Then they hear someone else that has more. And then all of a sudden they're depressed about it because that's that comparison game. So I felt like, what is wealth other than a life well-lived? And when I really got clear about what my portfolio is, some people's portfolio, and most, is a mix of stocks and bonds, you know, real estate investment trust funds, or, you know, like REITs, or like, you know, savings accounts and brokerage accounts. And maybe if they're afraid, some gold and silver. That's what most people are.
Yeah.
They're setting it in retirement plans that they're never really going to benefit enough from, but they feel kind of warm and cozy. I think of it as my portfolio is every book I've written is a piece of my portfolio. Mm. Every video course I've created is a piece of my portfolio. This studio I'm in is a piece of my portfolio. My cabin is a piece of my portfolio because I can drive to it. I do immersions there one-on-one with people. I have another cabin that we're going to turn into a music studio. I want real estate that I could touch and I could utilize. I want a portfolio that's an expression of who I am. And ultimately, that new portfolio is, once you understand that your portfolio is the expression of who you are based upon your skill sets, based upon your sole purpose, which is your values, your abilities, and passions, then wealth is transformed and no longer a target you try to get to that the Fed could erase or cut in half in a matter of years through inflation and quantitative easing. Or that you simply have a market that crashes that you had no control over because you set it and forget it or invested early, often, and always in dollar cost average and waited for 30 years. Like, most people are losing control of their expression because they're afraid of money They hand it off to so-called experts that are merely salespeople, and they ultimately neglect cash flow, they neglect skill sets, and they neglect fulfillment. So I look at my investments need to be three-dimensional. Like, Killing Sacred Cows helped me to build cash flow. I still get paid. That book came out in 2008. I still make money from Kindle and the paperback to this day, you know? But it also built up equity because it helped build my business where I could work without having to work, working in my sleep. And it was right. fulfilling, because when people read that and people give me a comment about what they've done in their life because of that, that shit feels really good. Like, I'm fickle as hell when as an author. If someone compliments me as an author, like, I'm theirs forever. You know, I have pretty thick skin when people shit on my stuff. And sometimes when they do, I'm like, they're not wrong. You know, someone once said, listening to my audiobook for Killing Sacred Cows, does this douchebag not know how to read? And I'm like, well, I really struggled reading book. So it was a fair comment. Like, I thought I was a better reader. I read that. I was like, I suck at reading. I've gotten better over the years, but I definitely sucked at reading that book, you know? So it's fair. But yeah, that's the new portfolio. That's what wealth means to me. And, you know, I know having more money and being fulfilled is way better than less money and being fulfilled.
Yes.
But I also know that chasing money at the expense of fulfillment is never fulfilling. So we have to look at wealth as a byproduct of value creation, consistent and congruent with who we are at our core. And look, I joked around with my business partner the other day, because writing this theatrical keynote, I hired a director, an acting coach, a movement coach, a screenwriter, like a video crew as we're building.
Like
out
I said, you don't do anything half-assed.
Yeah. And I just looked at him. I'm like, yeah, one man show. What an idea. Like, we have to explain what the fuck it is. We have to like I'm rehearsing all the time. I mean, but it's fulfilling. But it isn't easy. Like, I used to sell life insurance from 1998 to 2005. I sat across from people. I sold life insurance. I was really good at doing it, and I was really bored with it.
Right.
And every now and again, you know, when I have a new idea and I want to go do something new, my wife every now and again has this little thought of like, what if you would have just sold life insurance and we had $3 million a year coming in from renewals without having to do anything? I'm like, and I would be bored to tears, unhappy, unfulfilled, but have consistent cash flow, you know? Like, so again, my new portfolio is I'm always looking to build assets that are an extension of who I am to build value in the world, which builds connection with people that allows me to have conversations like this and to feel good about what I'm up to.
Talk to me about your book, your newest book, Money Unmasked. Yeah. I want to know about this relationship that we have to money.
That's what like our relationship to ourself is reflected on our relationship to money. Are we reckless with money? Do we avoid it? Do we give too much away? Do we spend more than we have? Like, there's all these little factors. And so I created this money persona quiz so that people could understand what their money persona is.
Oh, nice.
And then that will help them predict their success or failure when it comes to money. What are the traps? What are the, you know, springboards? Like, because there's a winning side and a shadow side of it. And once people understand that, they'll understand themselves better. And they can also look and say, well, if these are the traps, why are they there? Like, I've been all for money personas because it's very contextual and it's very much like we have transformations in life. I grew up around the first money persona, which is the miser who plays a game called preservation and ends up with money that they won't spend because they are addicted to holding on to what they've got. My family came from my great-grandfather leaving his pregnant wife to come to America to become a coal miner just in time for a coal mining disaster. So he has to be a sheep herder or goat herd, live in a tent, not see his daughter till she's 7 years old. That shit permeates scarcity throughout an entire family.
Yeah,
and that can last for generations, right? So that money persona comes from stories and the way we're raised and the fear that we start to present to each other in the name of preservation and protection. So, like, once you understand that that's the case, you realize that when we're in that shadow persona, we're being selfish. And the gateway out is serving others, solving problems, and adding value. It's actually through co-creation and collaboration, not through isolation. And until people understand that, they can work harder in isolation, but they're going to continue to be limited, exhausted, and frustrated. And when we have mantras like, you can't trust people, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself, am I enough, if I have more money, will I be more lovable, and, you know, am I lovable, those are all these subconscious things that people don't say out loud, but govern their behavior when it comes to money. So I wrote every word of this book, other than the editors fixing some of my, you know, grammatic challenges or things like that. But like, this is a piece of my heart. This is my life's work that I've never been more excited about a book than I am this book and putting it out in the world, because in the end, it's all about love, but I give a lot of practicality before we get to that situation. Because if I start there, nobody listens. But right. if I show logically how we get there, and it begins with ourselves, well, then I think it can make a big difference.
So I want to ask you about this, because as I was mentioning to you earlier, I trade these days, I teach trading these days, and one of the hardest things to suggest to people out there that they're like, hey, just give me the signal, give me the indicator, give me the thing that can make me more money. And I'm like, no. You guys don't understand. Like, this is an inner game thing. It's a psychology thing. It's a mindset thing. And a lot of it is based on self-sabotage, scarcity, all that stuff that comes up. So without maybe reading your whole book, what might you say to somebody to help them understand that it is like a thing that they need to do that inner work on, as opposed to just, Garrett, show me how to make more money, or show me how to save more money, or whatever, because ultimately it's not about the numbers.
All right. Let me do 2 minutes, 3 minutes to just
yes, please.
Take people through the experience. And
let's do it.
I'll take you through this experience. All right. So
perfect.
Just imagine, if you will, like, I'm going to take you through this exercise. I want you to pay really close attention to your thoughts and emotions as I take you through this exercise. So let's just say for a moment that you have an extra $10 per month coming into your life each and every month for the rest of your life.
Yep.
No strings attached, no taxes owed. Do with it what you will, and you can just answer this in your own mind. What would you do with it? How does it make you feel? What are you thinking about? Now imagine if you had $100 each and every month for the rest of your life coming in, no strings attached. How does that make you feel? What would you do with that? What are you thinking about? Now if we add a zero and take it to $1,000, not once, but each and every month for the rest of your life, how do you feel about that? What are you thinking about? How does it make you feel? Well, you guessed it. We're going to add another zero, $10,000 each and every month for the rest of your life, above and beyond everything you already have. No taxes owed. Do with it what you will. What would you do? How do you feel? What are you thinking about? Let's take it to $100,000. Each and every month. Now what would you do? What are you thinking about? How do you feel? What if it's $1,000,000 each and every month? A millionaire each and every month the rest of your life. Did nothing different, but that money's coming in. What would you do with that? How's it make you feel? All right, well, what if you're a billionaire? See, when I take people through that exercise, I want people to pay close attention. At what number did you stop thinking about what the money could do for you or what you could buy and turn your focus to value for others? Now, if your number is 10,000, that's your value index. If you're not sure what to do with the larger numbers, I want people to think bigger. Expand your value. Focus on impact. See, when people are stuck in scarcity, they always ask, what's in it for me? But when you add a zero, it's easy to turn our focus to others. About serving others, solving problems, adding value. So if I ask that question again, where did you cross over? At what point was it more than what you need or could buy beyond what you could take? The key is to create a vision bigger than your problems, because the vision is the ultimate container in which to create value. And if we can put value first, if money is no longer the primary reason or excuse we do or don't do something, we win. We're free. So that's how we go from the thought of scarcity and abundance to being in an experience. Why would we wait for that amount of money to do the things we say we would do to add value? People are stuck in the, when I have this, then I'll do that. But they'll never have that if they're stuck in that mindset. Because the mind is creating a limited container that's like a prison cell that they can't escape, because they're waiting for something to happen first versus taking action based upon what that vision is.
Yes. And Yes, it is that action. And people wait all the time. Well, when I have this amount of money, I will, et cetera. And it's like, do it now, even if it's a small way to do it. Start today, right this second, and then see where you get to. I love that.
And if, like, that's in the book, I'm like, if you don't think you have enough money, you could be more resourceful. Because there's three great lies people tell themselves. I don't have the money. I don't have the time. I don't have the ability. Those are only limiting factors when we try to do too much on our own. If we think we have to do everything by ourselves, we end up like these limited money personas, like a miser that I mentioned, or a conservative, which isn't a political affiliation. The conservative is a philosophy of accumulation, and it's all about delayed gratification and enjoyment, but they never, ever get to the place where they actually tap into the money because they're afraid that they're going to never have enough.
Yeah, and that sucks.
Right? Then there's the striver, which the striver plays a game called status, just thinks they could work harder to make more money, but they inevitably burn out. Or the high roller. The high roller is all about, you know, the opportunity, and they take on chance and risk and cut corners and end up bankrupt due to short-lived riches. So those shadow personas are problematic, and they all come when we're governed by scarcity, living in selfishness and isolation rather than value creation and cooperation. But if we can live in a place where it's serving others and solving problems and delivering value, we become either the mindful manager instead of the miser, the planner instead of the conservative, the creator instead of the striver, or the catalyst instead of the high roller. So the catalyst thinks and plays big, and they show us ways we can all win together, right? They're visionary, nice. They're a connector, they're a mover and shaker. The creator is an artist, an inventor, an entrepreneur. They lead with innovation and ingenuity and create new pathways for us to add value. The planner, stable, thoughtful, and strategic. They're instrumental for an organization looking to plan for contingencies and monitor the effectiveness of any initiative. Or the mindful manager is detail-oriented, efficient, and great at improving things. They look to be more resourceful, enhance ideas, and reduce waste. So that's what the book's really about, is what is your money persona? How do you tap into other winning personas of other people so that you can collaborate? And then money, time, and ability won't be your limiting factors, because you can tap in, if you have the right vision, to other people wanting to support and be part of something that matters.
So y'all, get his book. Read it, check it out, go through his work. That is awesome.
Yeah,
so I want to.
There's cool bonuses where people get worksheets on the money personas and audios on the money personas. There's stuff about my comedy that they'll get as a free download. You know, they can take the money persona quiz. So we give these like really awesome bonuses to entice people, to seduce them into buying the book and help themselves and help me get this book out there. You know, I'm an author. I don't want these on shelves. I want these in minds. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. Like that concept of shelf help. Yeah. People buy the books, yeah, and then like just by osmosis, they assume it will do something amazing to their life. So I have this 4-part question that I ask all of my guests, and I'd love to get your responses because I want to know like how some of these things work for you and how you actually get these things like done. How do you write 9 books? All this stuff. So it's based on the acronym HERB, H-E-R-B. The H stands for habits. What are some of your main habits?
So I get up in the morning and I meditate or listen to a talk from one of my spiritual mentors if I'm struggling through meditation. And then I just drink some water. I go do the sauna. I do the cold plunge. And then I do some stretching. And then some days I do a little bit of writing. Some days I don't. It just depends on the amount of time I have and how active my mind was during meditation. That's like my morning habits and rituals. I like to write or film on certain days so that I know that that is cleared. And that's a day I can like, I like writing earlier in the day, not later in the day. I like to do webinars later in the day because of the flow. I can get the energy for that. But to write in the afternoon for me, I hit a lot of like obstacles. I get a little bit tired. I get distracted, you know? But I like to write most days, like even if it's just outline something and then just write a little bit more and a little bit more. And sometimes I'll have 6 blogs going, but the one calls to me. So I write a little bit more there. I love to write on airplanes because it's the best
yes.
time for me just to be like put on my headset and write. So I'm just always looking at these 5 and 5, the 5 things I want to do less of are operations, management, you know, spreadsheets and numbers, like hiring and firing and details. Instead, I want to do content creation. I want to do podcasts and interviews where I'm being interviewed. I like that more than interviewing other people. Maybe I'm too vain. I don't know. It's just what I like to do. I like to talk about my shit. I love, you know, practicing and performing. I love high level relationships where I'm finished a call with them and I feel super stoked about what the collaboration could be. And then, you know, I'm constantly refining how to do YouTube, because now I've got What Would Garrett Do? It's garrettgunderson.com/WWGD, where people could type in questions and my wife and I do those. Nice. Or I'll bring in someone I have good energy with and just film a bunch of videos. Sometimes I'll just do reaction videos on my own, but that shit has been hard for me over the years to find what my flow is there, you know, because I tried interviewing other people. I'm a terrible interviewer. People are like, you interrupt all the time. I'm like, they're like, watch Joe Rogan. I'm like, you want to compare me to the best interviewer in the world? Go fuck yourself. Like, I'm not going to be that good of an interviewer.
Why are you not Joe Rogan?
I'm like, yeah, like for my 80,000 subscribers, sorry. But so I'm just like trying to play to my strengths. I think we all have a DNA for our intellectual property. And I was afraid to write when I first started to write, but now I'm not really afraid to write. Yeah, I just like, I was like, am I a good enough writer? And like, if you read, you could tell Money Unmasked, you can hear my voice in it.
Your voice.
Hard not to, you could tell I wrote it because it has that emotion behind it and it has the way I would say things. And yeah, so it was a long process, but now I'm really like enjoying this writing process.
Well, I can't wait to read that one. That will be amazing. So the E in herb stands for environment. How do you set up your physical space? I know you have various spaces, but how do you, like, what are the important aspects of those physical spaces so that you can get into your flow, be the most creative you can be?
The cabin was instrumental. So we have a garage and there was this empty room above it. So I turned it into the place I go work. So the cabin is for leisure and family, but nice. Above the garage is for work. And cool. So that's where I go up and write. And then if I hit like a, if I'm just have writer's block, I go shoot my bow. I go walk the river. I pick up my guitar. Like I just have these things to kind of like take a little break and then come back. And so that's the key environment if I have like a major project. This office I'm in now, I can write pretty well here. Sometimes I'll go sit out at the kitchen table because we have a view of both mountain ranges in Salt Lake City, the Ochre Mountains and the Wasatch Front, which are, there's really beautiful mountain ranges. And at night or in the morning early, just the sparkliness of the city. Mm-hmm. From where we're at, that's, I just think views never get old, and so that really helps out. But sometimes I'm in here just to avoid the distractions, you know. So yeah,
I hear you. So the R stands for resources. That could be books, programs, coaches, sacred medicine, whatever resources that have really been impactful for you and that you would recommend to others.
I just have a philosophy that if I'm going to do anything that's of significance, I always start with a co-creator. So who's someone that can support and inspire me, who can create accountability if I hit a moment of scarcity to get into creation? So when I was like, I want to do comedy, I call my buddy Marcus, who was runner up on Last Comic Standing. When I was like, nice. I want to do a one-man show, I call Michael Port to become a director, right? Like I'm always looking for who's that one person. When I wrote Money Unmasked, I called AJ Harper, who wrote Write a Must Read, because I knew that she could pull out the best work with me and be a fantastic editor. Like I'm always looking for who's that co-creator so I can have that soundboard and that I can like get my very best out of me because they can challenge me and they can challenge me in a positive way.
Nice. So finally, the B is beliefs. What are some of your core beliefs or perspectives, the ways in which you see the world that have allowed you to essentially become who you are today?
This is, might be surprising, but the world's fucked and there's nothing I need to do about it. Like it's not my responsibility. I have a philosophy that it's about self. It's about self, then family. It's about self, then family, then tribe. It's about self, then family, then tribe. And then beyond that, maybe community, then maybe the world. But I just worry about those first three. And I never sacrifice me for someone else because I people pleased in the past and it didn't work. I determine the rules. And my wife said back in the day, she used to think I was selfish, but now she thinks it was really smart because if I don't take care of myself, I don't really have that much to give.
Totally.
And so when people get really wrapped up in everything that's going on in the world, I'm like, yeah, cool. Like not my fight. Like my fight isn't a fight. I'm just here to like share or to plant a seed of hope, connection, and expression in the hearts of a billion people through entertainment, helping restore love to humanity. But I'm not going to do that by fighting over, you know, all the stuff that's going on with COVID or the Federal Reserve. There's just too much bullshit. So like, yes. I just don't get caught up in it. And it just makes my life better.
I don't watch the news.
I'm uninformed to the nth degree.
I actually love that answer so much because I very much agree with it. And it's just like, yo, like take care of ourselves and then those closest. And that's that right there is plenty. So Garrett, yeah. If people are interested in learning more from you in maybe a more direct way, obviously they can go buy your book, which I highly, again, recommend that you do.
Yeah. But where would you like to send them? MoneyUnmasked.com for the book, MoneyUnmasked.com. But GarrettGunderson.com, if you click on Musings, my blog's on there. There's no chat GPT involved. It's just me, and I've written every word that's on that damn thing. I enjoy it. I'm sharing in a very vulnerable way, like all the good, the bad, the all that stuff. You can take your money persona quiz there, no charge. Yeah, you can grab a couple of my books. Some of them I think you can download for free if you just click on the books section, whether it's Killing Sacred Cows or whether it's What Would the Rockefellers Do. Don't even know if we're selling them. We might just be saying, give us your email and we'll get you this, and we aren't going to bother you. We'd be lucky to email you once a week if we're on top of our game, if you're on our email list. You know, that's not what we do very well.
I love the authenticity. So people go get on his list because you're not going to get bombarded. Get all of the resources.
Get the free stuff. And then, you know, like.
Well, Garrett, this has been awesome. One, for your wisdom and your experience, but more importantly, just to reconnect. This has been really great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks ever so much for listening. Whenever you're ready, here are three ways I can help you create a more lucrative life. One, subscribe for free to my lucrative newsletter for weekly insights on business, money, and mindset. Two, join Club Lucra to connect with a like-minded community so that you don't have to go it alone. Three, work with me one-on-one to chart the course from where you are to where you want to be. Everything you need is at lucra.com. That's LUCRA.com. Lucra, where wealth equals well-being.